Hey everybody, it is December 11th, 2025, and this is a very impactful episode of Frank About Health. I have with me my special guest today, Dr. Todd Otten, MD, who is an expert on caregiving burnout, an expert in multiple ways. First of all, we're going to talk about his journey, having gone through it, as I can identify with circumstances in my life this past year. But simultaneously, we'll talk about a book that he's written called Ripple of Change, as well as a documentary that he's working on right now, full title of which to be disclosed later on in the show because it has its own dedicated segment. I will issue my disclaimer as usual, but keep in mind this show is best for those that are dealing with burnout. So I'm going to read directly from quotes that I created. First of all, this episode title is The Caregiver Crisis: Healing Burnout with Dr. Todd Otten. We're going to discuss in segment one what burnout is, why it's not your fault, and how caregiving reshapes your life. And then simultaneously, as far as Dr. Otten's background is concerned, or Todd, I presume I can call you Todd throughout the show, here is his background, which is very important to understand that he has a full 360 view of burnout, both personally and professionally. He is a board-certified family physician, co-founder of Our Quadruple Aim, which is an advocacy platform, 20-plus years in patient care. He is Flight Surgeon of the Year for the Atlantic Fleet in the U.S. Navy, author of the book Ripple of Change, and the executive producer of the upcoming documentary Suck It Up, Buttercup: Truth and Betrayal of the American Healthcare System. Please correct me if I'm wrong about the title.
You were so close, Frank.
Oh,
It's
sorry.
actually you're so close. The suck it up, buttercup's the easy part. It's trust and betrayal, healthcare in America.
Yes. And of course, everyone knows, anyone who's been watching Frank About Health for the past 4.5 years, I have been advocating for so many healthcare solutions and problems. But I think we're on the cusp going into 2026 of trying to really overtake a lot of the turbulence that has been created. I know I've been discussing that this is a Voices of Disruption campaign that I am on. I figure Dr. Todd Otten is definitely a voice of disruption, but for the good, which we will explore throughout the episode. Now, that all being said, Todd, I welcome you to Frank About Health. I thank you for being here. And I want you to just take the floor and give me your own self-directed interpretation of burnout on all the perspectives that would resonate with everyone.
Well, first off, Frank, thanks for the warm welcome and having me on the show. It's truly a pleasure. And, every time I hear these accomplishments, it's almost like, holy smokes, is he talking about me? Did I do all those things in my career? But you think back about, or I think back about my career, and in terms of burnout, I mean, there were several points where I was probably on the edge of burnout, if you will. You think about stress, and really it's the body's reaction to external demands. And we all have stress, right? And I used to tell patients, everybody has a bucket that you can throw stress into it. Some people have a little bucket, some people have a thimble. Some people's bucket is massive. But when that bucket starts to overflow, that's really when we're talking about burnout. And, burnout is, I like to often describe it in relation to physicians, because obviously that's my wheelhouse. But emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, that feeling where you're jaded, you're callous. I'm sure many listening to the show have seen a physician who it's like they're a zombie, or they're a shell, or they're a robot. Cynicism, speaks for itself, a lack of empathy, right? And reduced sense of personal accomplishment. And this can be extrapolated to far beyond physicians, far beyond nurses, far beyond clinicians, caregivers, firefighters, teachers, et cetera. And interestingly enough, the drivers in our system are often related to profit. And I think this is really creating a lot of these issues where there's more and more demands, but we're human beings. We only have so much to offer, right? And when we're exceeding those capacities, then we're getting into the realm of burnout. And the negative ramifications are far and wide in terms of repercussions, for sure.
Right. No, I mean, overall, I always think of it as stemming from the central nervous system, but it's even more than that. Like you indicated, there are environmental triggers that contribute to it. It's just your nervous system probably is wired based on past traumas or past patterns that you've become used to, especially if you're continually giving caregiving support for an ongoing elder, whether it's a parent or a sibling or somebody. But at the same time, when you're having those same burnout responses, when you're not even in the caregiving mood or mode, rather, there must be a learned conditioned pattern that somehow gets triggered when you're going through the ongoing stress, correct?
Well, I think you make a good point. I mean, everybody's experienced trauma in some capacity. In my mind, trauma in and of itself is a continuum. I mean, think about, like social media or the news. I mean, goodness gracious, there's a lot of things that are traumatic just in that regard. And then you go back, we've got these neural networks that have been developed at some point in our life from really a self-protective mechanism, whether it's fight, flight, or freeze. And when those are reactivated, it just unleashes these emotions and these reactions and these responses. So burnout is definitely, in my mind, closely woven to previous trauma responses and those negative neural networks. Bessel van der Kolk in his book, The Body Keeps the Score, is just a brilliant example of how it's all interconnected. You're right, the
Right.
central nervous connect system, I mean, it drives everything in our body. We're not little parts where you can just take one piece out and, put in a new carburetor or a new muffler or whatever, right? It's all interconnected. And we
Right.
need to start thinking that way, not just in medicine and healthcare, but in terms of the workplace, et cetera. I mean, the holistic approach is definitely where we need to be headed for sure.
Right. Now, that all being said, is this something we're just waking up to now, or has it always been the case of how we need to be thinking, but it's kind of been hidden based on other people's expectations?
Yeah, that's a great question, Frank. I think this is, human beings have been around for obviously a long time,
Right.
and these things aren't new. It's not like we've had this massive evolutionary change in the last decade, right? It's just that
Right.
we're starting to understand this a lot better, and we're starting to understand trauma responses and mental health and burnout and all these other things. So they've always been there. You go back to World War I, we talk about shell shock. And
Right.
these soldiers that were exposed to these horrendous things, and at times they were just cowering in the corner and couldn't respond. And it was thought as a malady, if you will. Fast
Right.
forward to World War II, it got a little bit better. We started to get into Vietnam and beyond, and our understanding of PTSD and all that stuff got better. But even, the appreciation of mental health and its importance in someone's overall well-being is really, in my opinion, probably the last quarter century.
Right.
Even when I was in medical school, Frank, which I've got some gray hairs on my chin, right? So, coming up on a quarter century since I graduated from medical school, but my training in regards to trauma was really more of the physical trauma type stuff. Gunshot wounds, victims of a car accident, motor vehicle accident, whatever. The psychological traumatic stuff, I mean, it was like this much we covered. And so it just wasn't taught because we didn't understand it. It really wasn't until, I shouldn't say this, but the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Events, in the late 90s, really shed a lot of light on how trauma impacts our overall well-being. And I don't mean to digress and just totally talk about trauma, but it is totally intertwined with burnout.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
I think about the intergenerational trauma that occurs in medical school. Some of the ways we're trained. I mean, it's frankly, I didn't mean to say frankly, I suppose. But
But I'm frank about health. That's what we
I guess
expect. I'm just
there you
joking.
go. I mean, it's sadistic at times, the things that I, encountered when I was being taught. And why are we doing that,
I mean, it's very interesting because when I was in high school in particular, I was a math science major, but one of my electives was in biomedical sciences, and I was learning about the autonomic nervous system. And so I know that going back into Biology 101, there was the difference between the parasympathetic system and the sympathetic system. And it sounds like a play on the word sympathy. You know, like when people get a hug, they feel relief. I think that there is a metaphor behind that, but it's the understanding really of how the stress hormones go through the spinal cord as well as through the brain and just trigger the responses of whether you're going through burnout or relaxation or having the right amount of balance when you're dealing with whether it's a difficult situation or a traumatic situation or even a very simple one. Now, people probably learn about it very simplistically and as such don't see the connection when they are watching others go through the symptoms of burnout and PTSD and other stuff. But lately, I don't know if it's because of the COVID pandemic or if it's because of other chaos that has been happening in our country, especially this past year, that people are just now honing in on the real roots of it so that they can really get a grasp of it or have their own say versus whatever the system is saying. Is that a fair assessment or is that something that I'm just grasping at?
No, I think you're right. I mean, and I'll stay in my lane a little bit when we talk about healthcare. I mean, I think
Sure.
historically, at least from my perspective, we were taught to work harder, do more, put the patient first, and all these other things, and at times to the detriment of your own well-being.
Right.
And I think people are finally like, well, wait a minute. You know, if I'm burned out, how in the heck am I giving my best to Frank or a family member, right? You're not. You're totally
Exactly.
not. And so, and people are, I think people are starting to wake up to that. They're starting to feel a little bit more empowered. They're starting to push back against some of the issues going on systemically within the healthcare space. But we need an exponential increase in that pushback, because as it stands, you know, people are getting hurt in our healthcare
Yes.
system the way it's going, like big time.
Yes. Yes. And I would say one of the fundamental flaws that is going on is lack of communication, or whether it's misinformation, which in itself is not effective communication. Well, I've got even more questions, but we're about to take our first break. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want everyone to know that when we come back, we're going to talk about the book Ripple of Change, and I gather we're going to be able, through the book, understand a lot more of what Todd has been talking about in terms of burnout in our society today. We're going into 2026, and from what I'm hearing, it's going to be even more stressful unless we get our bearings together now. And that's why I'm looking at this particular episode of Frank About Health as a call to action for all of us to really do what we can with our own internal resources, our own cognitive understanding of whatever resources are out there for healthcare information, healthcare payment programs, healthcare solutions, whether it's alternative treatments and so forth and so on. But I think that starting with the book Ripple of Change in segment two, we will have a roadmap to start following together. So please stay tuned right here on talkradio.nyc and on our social media channels, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitch. And if you have any questions for us, we are live. Please put it in the chat box, and our engineer Jesse will read out the question out loud and we'll do our best to answer them for you. Okay, we'll be back in a few.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. By the way, I just want everyone to listen to a quote that I think is important for everyone who might be going through burnout. Burnout is not a personal failure. It's the predictable outcome of unrealistic, unsupported responsibility. And I do believe it's a two-way street. You get triggered, and at the same time, it's how you respond. So what's up here needs to be the mediator in how you're able to respond with focus, energy, and at least a balance, because no one is ever purely free from burnout, but they can learn to contain it somehow. And I guess maybe that's the segue, Todd, to talk about your book, Ripple of Change. Did you discover when you wrote it that you were finding a balance in how to deal with it?
Well, interestingly enough, Ripple of Change was, it really started as is probably a good part of my healing process. You know, I was, a little over 15 years out of medical school when I was doing too much, Frank. I was seeing like 6,000 visits a year. I was chief of staff. I was the director of an accountable care organization, like doing everything under the sun. You know, it's because the physicians, you're just taught, do more, work harder, put your head down, stuff it into a box, compartmentalize, all these other things. Well, that's all well and good till it's not. And when it's not, it can become an absolute mess. You know, in hindsight, looking back through my journey through burnout, it was obvious. I mean, the things I alluded to earlier were I was exhausted. My compassion was low. You know, I was going to work like a zombie at times. But it really hit the fan when I had some pay withheld because I had two charts that weren't done, which that is just ridiculous in and of itself that that even occurred. But, you know, the angry, frustrated little guy was like, you lit him on fire at that point. I and I'm joking, obviously, a little bit, but I remember Frank sitting in the backyard in tears, man, hating the job that I had loved for so long. You know, taking care of other human beings is such a joy in its purest form. It's a euphoria that is almost hard to describe at times.
Yes.
But when you've got all these external pressures and they're just never ending and it doesn't stop and you're down that continuum of stress into burnout, it becomes a disaster. And that was really, I was ready to quit. And so I got some time off. I came back and that's when it took about 2 years for me to really, truly recover from that. And I think there's still vestiges of that time period that I struggle with at times. But Ripple of Change initially began as another part of my healing. I wrote a poem called Medicine is a World of Gray, which is kind of a dark look at primary care and the realities of it. But then I wrote a chapter called Anatomy of Burnout. And, you know, of course, I'm biased. I'm the author of the book, but it's one of my favorite chapters because it really looks at, you know, when a physician is going through burnout, how does that impact not just that individual, but their family, right, their friends, their colleagues, least of which patients. You know, when I was going through that, Frank, the negative impact was hit thousands of people. If you think about it, thousands of people. I mean, I was caring for thousands of people at that time, and I was far from my best. The book really took on an amazing evolution when my co-author, Joshua Judy, got involved. He was a former patient of mine, and so we weave my journey through burnout, his journey through the mess that I created for him with a prescription I wrote for him, but really with the theme that we all can play our part to fix the healthcare, I'll call it what it is, shit show that exists in the United States today. I mean, if we all do a little bit, we all play a role, it can and will get better. And, you know, I believe it. I think we need everyone to believe that.
You know, you bring up a very good point because I always look at the where it begins and ends modality. And I would say from a local perspective, meaning here in this house, where I have a father who is recovering from prostate cancer and has been through every, you know, leap and valley of, are we near the end? Is there a cure? Are we going to be able to stabilize? So forth and so on. And we get the information. I process it. But then I notice all of a sudden it's an alternate universe. People are not really processing it. There's a mixture of denial. There's a mixture of confusion. Maybe even in some cases the grammar isn't effective. I've been using a lot of AI to help translate, which helps, but it's not the be-all end-all. It's not a human being. So then comes, where does the middle ground go through? Now, the middle ground is the community of people you have around you that are able to discuss and contribute their pieces of the puzzle to make sure the whole narrative is consistent with reality versus whatever faulty perceptions can be generated by misinformation or possibly even just natural trigger or fear responses, right? But when you have that one layer, and then we see what has happened in our country the past year with the collapse of the Big Beautiful Bill, with the government shutdown, with a lot of other things, that there is a disclaimer here. This is not a political show, but I'm trying to say, you use the word shit show. I know that word is not censorable, so I'm able to use it. I have a feeling that that has been manifested to really burn all of us out and not deal with the realities that we're still trying to cope with. But that's just a feeling. What would you have to say is your perception of what really is going on a national level versus a local level? Because it really begins locally, but we don't need people overshadowing the narrative to make things even more confusing. So what would be your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I'll default back to, you know, the world I live in, which is the healthcare space and medicine, right? I think,
right.
You know, we have all these, well, I'll just call it is what it is. You know, greed is wreaking havoc in healthcare, yes. Big time. You know, we've got these legacy institutions out there that are happy with how things are going because they're making a lot of money. And that's the upper level that's really benefiting from it. It's not the majority. It is a small chunk of the pie, if you will. And the decisions that are made at these, you know, 30,000 foot levels or higher, if you will, trickle down and affect all of us at the community level.
Yes.
And so just I'll give you one example, you know, like perhaps prior authorizations. For those not familiar, prior authorizations in healthcare is, you know, the idea behind it is supposed to weed out fraud and waste and abuse, but it is being completely misused to increase the profit of insurance companies, frankly. And, you know, as a physician, when I've got to prove that my medical decision making is in a patient's best interest to somebody who has never seen the patient, never looked at their chart, it creates this nightmare of effects that occur for not only the clinician, but more importantly, the patient, in terms of delays and lack of access and all these other things. So that's these decisions being made at the highest levels that trickle down to the community level, to the individual level. I mean, how do you explain to somebody who's got a malignancy of some sort that somebody who's never seen them, never looked at their chart, is dictating what type of treatment they're going to get?
Exactly.
And it's all for money. It's all about money. And it's just sick, Frank, some of the things that I've seen and heard.
I completely hear you. This is leaps and bounds with everything I've been seeing every day. I try to stay away from the media as much as possible because it likes to make it much exponentially stronger than it really is. But it's kind of hard to do, especially when I'm dealing day to day with a case like my father's. But yet, I am then questioning, maybe from my own psychology basis here, that we've been starting the show on the topic of burnout, but is the quote-unquote shit show that is being presented to us meant to burn us out even more? I know the greed component is there. That's clear. But the loss of humanity is definitely gone. I see that. And it makes us have to go from within in order to maintain that, which actually is the best thing. It's best to start from yourself before you give out. But that chasm that gets formed, that bridge needs to be built. And I believe from the community on up, the only thing that I'm trying to understand, though, is that aside from typical greed, if that's the way to put it, what is the hidden motive to just disconnect from humanity or disconnect? Or maybe it's narcissism. I mean, I'm just coming up with key words, but I don't know what the true narrative is.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that contribute to it, Frank. But, you know, as I've dug into these things, I mean, it just comes back. A lot of this comes back to greed or power, or whatever's in the self-serving interest of the few, as opposed to the many, if you will. And it's incredibly frustrating for those of us that went into a profession to devote our lives to helping other human beings, to have these external forces negatively impacting that and our ability to provide care. You can only be frustrated and feel defeated so many times
Right.
before you kind of give up. And we've got this notion of learned helplessness that's out there that is, it's
Exactly.
just pervasive. People are like, well, I'm just going to go to work and get a paycheck. I'm going to put my blinders on, put my head down, do the best I can, cry in the car on the way home, and cope another way. I mean, I hear this all the time,
Yeah.
from my colleagues. And it's really sad because it's such a beautiful profession otherwise. And I think, I guess what I'm building up to is, I think the collective has the ability to push back.
Yes.
And that is, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but that's really what we're trying to accomplish with the documentary.
Exactly. I am t and I can't wait to discuss that in the next segment because I only saw the trailer, but already I was looking for where can I find it, and I realized you're still in post-production, I gather, correct?
Correct. We're right on the verge of post-production. We're real close to film lock. We're like this close. In fact, we're discussing like the dates film lock's going to occur and all these other things. But it's exciting. I'll go back to you brought one thing up earlier, and maybe I'll touch on it just real brief before we
Sure.
get to the break, was the concept of silos. Silos are problematic not just in healthcare delivery, and I'm not
Right.
talking about a missile silo or a silo on a farm. But
Right.
it creates the
Little
visual, right?
fiefdoms. Yes.
Yeah, but it's super problematic in healthcare delivery. Like you go to see one physician and then you follow up with your primary and they don't even have access to your information. That's just a microcosm of a silo, if you will. But there's also silos in people trying to move the needle forward. And that's
Right.
a big part of what we're trying to unwind.
Well, I just think, and definitely to wrap up what you just said or echo what you just said prior to the break, I was happy when I heard that mRNA vaccines were being created to cure cancer and AIDS and I think diabetes as well. And now they've been defunded. I mean, it's like there's definitely I don't know if it's conscious or just whatever it is, there's a break in the system. I think done on purpose, but when we come back from the next break, we're going to really tap into your documentary because I truly believe it is our inner community that we have to populate in 2026 and really push back on what has been happening. So, everyone, please stay tuned right here on Frank About Health as we are talking about caregiving burnout, but more importantly, how we're going to create that ripple of change for a better healthcare system for all of us in the new year. We'll be back in a few.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and the space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversations guide you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. As you all saw during the commercial break, this book is available on Amazon.com. I'm sure it's available in other places where you can get books online, but you can see on Prime, if you are a Prime member, you can get it by tomorrow and start reading it as fast as you can. So that is a book that I have had a chance to preview, but I really want to discuss in this section your documentary. And I'm going to title it correctly, Suck It Up, Buttercup. Oh, wow. Come on. You faded on me one in the middle of a sentence. Suck It Up, Buttercup, Trust and Betrayal, Healthcare in America. Tell me all about that. I mean, I want the audience to know what I've already seen in terms of who's in it, in terms of what you discuss, in terms of what kind of impact you hope to make with this documentary.
Yeah, wow. Frank, I'm not gonna lie. We are so excited about the evolution of this project. You know, I got to give credit where credit's due. The original idea was a colleague of mine, Dr. Marianne Wilbur, who's a GYN oncologist, yes, who essentially stepped away from full-time practice in her mid-40s because of systemic abuses. And she wrote a book called The Doctor's No Longer In, but she had a dream to make a documentary for the American public about really what's going on. And the goal of the project is really to pull the curtain back for the American public, how greed has or is destroying our healthcare delivery system. But it's not just an airing of grievances. There are some very unique evergreen calls to action to really try and educate, activate, mobilize, you know, the 300 million people in this country who are fed up with what's going on. Because you get that many people involved, even if it's just a fraction of those individuals, we can really move the needle and go much further upstream to tackle some of these issues. But, you know, I've been blessed. We've been blessed with the cast of characters that we've been able to interview for this. I mean, I've gotten to meet, I can't even tell you how many heroes of mine in the thought leadership space and healthcare to change things. Don Berwick, who's the head of CMS in the Obama administration. Tina Shaw has become a friend of mine. She's running for Congress in New Jersey. Wendell Potter was a whistleblower on the insurance industry. Linda Pino was a whistleblower and highlighted in Michael Moore's Sicko. Least of which, we interviewed Mark Cuban. I think most people know who Mark Cuban is, and he's
Dark
obviously
tank.
Cuban. Yeah. Well, but Frank, you know what? He's actually, you know, his.
I know he left because of his thing with Amazon, his drug company.
Well, yeah, I don't know all the dynamics of that, but his pharmacy benefit manager company has been incredibly disruptive in a very positive way for the American public in terms of lowering costs. Yes. You know, cost plus drugs is essentially tackling that industry head on. And I know Mark wants to take it beyond that. And so, you know, the project is this amazing amalgamation of physician voices, nursing voices, patient voices,
right,
former insurance executive voices, celebrity voices, talking about the existing issues and then pointing ways forward. So you probably could tell I'm just over the moon about the, you know, the evolution of this.
And from our earlier discussion, you can understand why I am too. I mean, I've been doing Frank About Health for 4.5 years now with a bigger mission in mind, which is to take all of the disruptive voices out there and create that community to be able to help everyone that's now being overlooked by our administration. Especially without healthcare, you really don't have a life of any sort that we can all aspire to in the American dream. You have to have your foundation secure before you can build whatever your destination is in the future. You know, I think that's the entrepreneurial mindset of Mark Cuban.
Well, and to double click on that, you know, that last statement, I mean, we spend over $4 trillion on healthcare, rapidly approaching $5 trillion. Our life expectancy is that curve has successfully been bent downwards. And from a developed nation perspective, in terms of outcomes, we're not good. We're not even close to good. We're not even in the top 25.
No, you know, I think we're 169.
We're just, you know, so you think about it, so we spend a ridiculous amount of money and our outcomes, frankly, suck for a lot of different reasons.
Yes.
And so we need to do better. And to do that, we need a lot of people. You know,
Yes.
we need not just clinicians speaking up, but we need patients, and we need to be joining forces. You know, interestingly, I alluded to the evergreen calls to action in the film, Frank. One we touched on a little bit earlier, which is unlearning learned helplessness. So
Right.
learned helplessness goes back to that study in the 1960s where they put these poor dogs in a cage and shocked them repetitively to the point where they just kind of gave up. And then
Exactly.
even when they opened the door and the dogs could get out as they were shocking them, they just laid there because they didn't know
Classical
any better.
conditioning.
Totally. And it's happening in healthcare big time. And not only to clinicians, but also to patients.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, the landscape is so difficult to navigate. People who are needing care, after a while, they're just like, I don't know what to do. I give up, you know, and they don't get what they need. And it leads to bad outcomes or worse, unfortunately. The second part speaks to your, you know, what you're talking about earlier in terms of community and collaboration.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spill the beans completely.
Okay.
But ultimately, we're really wanting to accelerate an impact network, one
Yes.
that values people over profits. And by
Yes.
doing that, you bring all these amazing different voices together to work on solutions in a dynamic, agile way. So, yeah, we're thrilled with where this is going.
There is a person that has been on my show that I think is in your area. I don't know if you know Dr. Marshall Runge.
I can't say that I do, no.
He is this, he was, because he just retired, the CEO of Michigan Medicine, and he wrote that book, as I just titled, The Great American, Great American Healthcare Disruption. Well, either way, I had an entire 4-week episode dedicated to promoting his book. And
Wow.
he told me that because of the QR code setup I had on my screen, there was a spike on Amazon of a lot of viewers. I don't know if they actually converted to purchase. But he definitely got back to me, I think just a couple months ago, and said that Frank About Health did give him an impact. He invited me to his Forbes review event that we had back in July, I believe. And I think now he's doing the publicity book tour circuit around multiple universities in the nation. But he was creating the narrative of disruption. You, with this documentary, are creating a potential narrative of a solution. And that's why I find it like a bookend. And I hope you have a chance to reach out to him somehow. I know he's now a faculty member at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor in the medical school. But I don't know if he has those official roles anymore or if they're interim roles at this point while he's waiting for his successor to take over. But he is a big advocate of creating whatever changes can help the proper disruptions to occur using robotics technology on surgeries, having the mRNA vaccine, using AI to find cures. You know, those are the disruptions we should be focused on, not the other ones that have been contributing to burnout.
Agreed. And I think, you know, one of the issues that often occurs is there's these arguments back and forth, and we've got to learn how to come together on things. It's okay to disagree. But if it's to the detriment of moving forward in a positive fashion, that's incredibly problematic.
Exactly.
As you were talking about Marshall and his book, I was going to digress a little bit. One of the coolest parts of writing a book has been trading books with people, like trading signed books with my colleagues and other individuals. And it's, frankly, it's led to some amazing friendships just by swapping signed books. But people often ask, like, Todd, so you're not seeing patients full time, although that's going to change going into 2026 and so on and so forth. But they're like, so what do you do? And I was like, well, mainly I cause trouble. but in a good way, like we need good trouble, right? We need people who are not okay with the status quo and willing to push back and willing to speak up. And we need an exponential increase in those voices for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, if anything, when I had him, Marshall, on the show, it triggered me to be more advocacy focused than I already have been. I mean, I was coming from a place of focusing on particular illnesses and particular situations, all that I could identify with based on my understanding of mental health issues. But when I was witnessing my premium's going up, doubling on Medicare, or I had a nutrition benefit. I was preventing diabetes. Pre-diabetic I was at the time. Thankfully, that is over. But the nutrition benefit was canceled. I now have to pay out of pocket. I was getting my epilepsy medications from Canada through mail order, but with the tariffs and the VAT tax inflation, I'm now getting generic branded drugs with my insurance cheaper here. And some of the formula is gone. But, you know, it's like I have to make my compromises mainly because of my budget, not because of my health care. So when I saw the personal, as well as what I've been witnessing with other people having even worse problems, I said, that's it. I'm making it my mission to advocate for a community-based solution, which I'm going to focus more on 2026.
Well, I think I love community-based solutions. I think that's going to be a big part of how we move this forward. You know, when you're talking about advocacy, it had me thinking about, like, you know, how does the average person contribute, right? Like, not everybody's going to write a book. Not everybody's going to create a documentary. I mean, those are kind of at one end of the spectrum of trying to drive change. But I often talk about time, talent, and treasure in terms of ways to contribute. Yes. You know, even just talking about the issues with others and perhaps sparking interest is a way to be an advocate, right? You know, so talent, you know, book and all these other things. But even, you know, to the third component, treasure, maybe your way to contribute is you skip your morning latte and you support an organization that you think is moving things in the right direction. All these little touch points, when you start adding them up, you know, maybe together we can, quote unquote, boil the ocean when it comes to dysfunction in healthcare, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, if we have 300 million people taking a little cup and heating it up, we might move the temperature a little bit, right?
Well, you know, that metaphor of boiling the ocean sounds like climate change, but that's the type of climate change we can afford to make.
Oh, that's funny.
But either way, I think, you know, we're about to take our final break, but we will talk mainly about advocacy, a lot of what you've been doing, probably share a little bit about what I've been doing. I have a feeling we need to collaborate even more beyond this show. But if anything, I just realized that from what you've just said, and I really believe in the potential of this documentary you're about to release, that when we are all put to the pressure based on what's going on in our system of government or whatever the other social issues are, all of us want the same thing. We just don't realize it when everything is considered normal or when everything is copacetic. But we all want to be healthy and secure within each other. And we just, when we are in a dysfunctional system, that need grows bigger. That is what you hook into to build that community. That's exactly what happened during COVID when we were all trying to save our lives. That's when everybody was banding together. We just don't want to get into another pandemic to do that again. But ironically, this is a pandemic, but of a different sort. And we just have to get our own agency together and take charge going forward. All right, I did my little soapbox mantra right now. So everybody, just stay tuned and we'll be back in a few. On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody, you just saw a little teaser trailer of Suck It Up, Buttercup, Trust and Betrayal, Healthcare in America. Now, I'm curious to know, Todd, where do you anticipate this being released? In hospital systems, on Netflix, in theaters? What's your potential plan for the future? Over the internet, obviously.
Well, how about if I just answer yes, Frank?
Let's get it everywhere. Yes, I agree.
So, I mean, ultimately, this is interesting. So I often get asked the question, sort of like, what's your target audience? You got to have a target audience. It's got to be this little thing. And, you know, when you have this vision of trying to really inspire and empower the masses, you hesitate to want to get down to a niche. You know, and so I've gotten to the point where I say, you know, my target audience is anybody who's frustrated with healthcare in the United States,
which is pretty much everyone.
freaking number. And so we're in the process as we get closer discussing distribution plans. And so, yeah, there's going to be some local screenings and we're planning for a premiere in Baltimore on March 19th, actually in conjunction with Tom. And so that'll be sort of the release. But ultimately, what we'd really like to see with this is to get it onto ideally not just one streaming service, but potentially multiple streaming services so that as many eyeballs can see this as humanly possible. And Frank, at this point, you probably realize that's not self-serving. Like, you know, you don't write books, you don't do documentaries to become rich. You do them out of labor of love. And actually, I'm going to take a step back and maybe give you a little bit more of my why. You know, we touched on part of it. Going through burnout was one of it. But in my career, I've had four of my colleagues die by suicide.
I'm sorry.
Including one of my friends from medical school, including one of my mentors and partners. You know, in each one of those events is devastating. But, four times. And not only that, when I was practicing full time, the frustration of patients was nonstop. I would have visits for the patient would be complaining about things that they experienced in the healthcare space that had nothing to do with their diabetes or hypertension. I'm like, you know, we've talked about, I've let you vent for 20 minutes. We need to work on your blood pressure. Let's get back to what we're doing here. But to answer your question, I think there's going to be multiple avenues for people to hopefully see this product as we go forward. The biggest goal is obviously multiple streaming services, though.
Yes. Yeah. No, I it's funny when I think about how I've been coming up with a particular innovation that really looks at the financing of healthcare, you know, whether it's paying your copay, whether it's coming up with a payment for something that insurance won't cover, or whether it's meeting a high deductible. I mean, you really can't segment the market except between those that don't make money and those that are in elite status that have all the money that they need. But the issue is that the through line is that it's about your health. It's a ubiquitous need. It's just needed differently depending on who you are and your place in society. So when you have healthcare being ubiquitous, it doesn't really matter the segmentation strategy for your distribution. You just want to hit the immediate targets first and then phase it through. That's why people who do healthcare startups, like entrepreneurs, and I was part of an entrepreneurship group about 15 years ago at NYU, I had seen that those healthcare startups would mature after 10 years. They would exit after 20. That's not typical for a new venture. It's usually 3 to 5 years for most traditional ventures, even in the internet economy or the mobile economy or whatever was big at that time, new social media apps or companies, stuff like that. But healthcare, it's always a slow build into maturity. And I think if people on the entrepreneurship side understand that, and then, of course, the healthcare patients, physicians, systems, so forth and so on, understand that on the delivery side, then they can look and have patience, P-A-T-I-E-N-C-E, patience, that healthcare eventually does evolve into a humanitarian effort and profit-making venture. If it is worked in tandem, not in division, which is the current state of affairs.
I agree. There's a lot of divisiveness that exists in healthcare currently, and this isn't going to be fixed today, tomorrow, 3 months, 6 months, a year. Maybe not even in our lifetimes necessarily. This is a very complicated problem that we've gotten ourselves into with the existing infrastructure. It's going to take some time, which is in part why, the calls to action with the documentary are more evergreen. They're not intended to be like, hey, we can fix this in 2026 and everything's going to be great. Like, I don't know about that. I'm thinking more like 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of persistence. It's going to take a lot of time. But, I think that, and maybe we can shift into the positive things. There are a lot of good people out there, Frank. There are so many people that want to do something. I can't tell you how many individuals have just said, hey, how can I help? What can I do? Expecting absolutely nothing in return to make this project successful. And when you hear those things and you get those emails or those texts, then you're like, you know what? We're on to something where people are just wanting to step up and help to make this work. And there's
Absolutely.
pockets too. Like, there's a lot of amazing things that are happening out there. Recently, I joined a group called Plum Health. And I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but it's a direct primary care group. And essentially, they cut out, you've got a patient, you've got a clinician, and they interact. And you cut out a lot of the fat. And it's way cheaper, and you get better care, and you can get same day or next day appointments routinely. You connect with your clinician using this or via email. I mean, how cool is that? And it's at a fraction of the cost of what many people are currently paying. So for those that are frustrated, I would suggest DPC is direct primary care is something to investigate. It's a movement that's growing around the country, without a doubt.
Wow, that's so then I guess on that note, even from what you've just mentioned, we've talked about the word advocacy, but advocacy sounds like now a necessary person or a necessary role that people have to play. At this point, whether it's in a hospital system or in a community-based organization or whatever. Does that make sense, or just is it just my own conclusion?
No, I think the spin I would take on it is it's needed now more than ever, and the opportunities are everywhere. I'll give you one more example of just some amazing things. I'm involved with a nonprofit called Medicine Forward, and the mission statement of Medicine Forward is catalyzing positive change so the patient-physician relationship can flourish. And we're fully aware, right, that dyad of the patient and the physician is supported by an entire ecosystem. Nurses, physical therapists, pharmacists, clinicians, caregivers at home, family members, all kinds of amazing people. And that the organization, of course, again, Frank, I'm biased because I'm part of it, but it's this incredible community that looks to figure out, like, what can we do? What can we try? How can we explore? So for those that are looking for a landing place as to how they can contribute, that's just another example. I think about the Lorna Breen Foundation, who's working towards removing the barriers to mental health for clinicians and physicians to reduce the physician suicide rate is one of their primary goals. I doubt the majority of the audience knows that we lose about a physician a day in this country to suicide. That's that number
Were they
is
higher rates during COVID versus now, or vice versa?
the rates, unfortunately, have been pretty stable, depending on the source you could look, but this has been a problem for a long time. Underreported, not talked about, shoved under the rug, etc. Wendy Dean talks about physicians being the canaries in the coal mine in the healthcare industry. That's a perfect example of the systemic problems that exist.
I can't believe it. We're 2 minutes to ending. Listen, we're doing another show together. I mean, I literally want you coming back probably the first Thursday after the Christmas holiday, if you don't mind. I mean, it's the 8th of January, a Thursday. Does that sound possible to you? Yes, that's right, Jesse. I am pre-booking the show as we speak.
I'm going to give you the short answer of yes, Frank. I will double check my calendar. But this was a lot of fun, and I think it speaks to the universal interest that people are ready. They want to know more. The appetite for what's truly going on behind the scenes is there.
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, please take the following takeaways. If you are burning out or have been, it is not your fault, and there is support. Second, buy the book Ripple of Change on Amazon.com. That was what I showed you, but if you find it on eBay or any place else, by all means, go and grab it. Third, be on the lookout for this documentary. That the next show, Todd's next appearance on Frank About Health, will be giving updates on it and also promoting, quote unquote, the living hell out of it. Simultaneously, I have to thank not only Todd for being here, but a shout out to Tom Ingenio, who referred me to him. If you remember, he was on my show a few weeks ago. He is a big advocate for social change, and he referred me to another guest who will be on a very special holiday finale of Frank About Health from his studio, and he's in your documentary, Matthew Zachary, MZ.
All right. I love MZ. You're going to have a blast with MZ.
Exactly. And to talkradio.nyc out there, I'm going to make Frank About Health the biggest freedom fighter for all of us with your support as well. That includes you, Sam, you, Emily, and definitely you, Jesse. Now, I guess just out of courtesy, I will end the show. I know last time I did a show, I went over by 2 minutes, but we're also going to be speaking shortly with my parents, thanks to your wisdom and guidance. And thank you again for if you have any questions about Todd or me or the show, please email me at frankrharrison1@gmail.com. Otherwise, see you all next week. Bye-bye.